Sandpoint, K201DA 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS 88.1 FM in False Pass, and KKQA 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A bill to create an alert system for missing Indigenous people in New Mexico has passed the state legislature and heads to the governor's desk. Jeanette Didios has more.
The Turquoise Alert System will allow law enforcement to quickly share information about missing Indigenous people through news media, social networks, and digital highway signs without having to wait the standard 48 hours. According to the New Mexico Department of Justice, there are about 200 missing Indigenous people in the state. Bill sponsor, Democratic Senator Angel Charlie, who's Laguna and Diné, shared the news on Instagram and said the system is not a tribal mandate, but will instead go through the Department of Public Safety.
It's not going to fix our jurisdictional complexity issues, but it is going to ensure that when a Native person goes missing, that there's immediate rapid response.
The alert system will coordinate with state law enforcement agencies, tribal communities, and state resources when a missing Indigenous person goes missing. The governor has 20 days after the session ends to sign this bill into law and would take effect July 1st. For National Native News, I'm Jeanette Didios.
The number of Alaska Native language speakers has been declining over the years, including speakers of Aleutic. But a new language class that's live streamed from Port Lions aims to combat that trend locally. KMXT's Davis Hovey reports.
Jamai Kuiana Teluji, hello and welcome. Thank you all for coming to another episode of King's Corner.
Every Thursday, students from the school in the native village of Port Lions discuss Aleutic culture and language. That's in preparation for class lessons and conversations in Aleutic that are live streamed online twice a month. It's the Port Lions students' first time speaking their native language within school through the Aleutic Culture class. That includes practicing everything from weather reports to animals and place names in Aleutic. Jess Egemeyer II, who works for the native village of Port Lions, teaches the class.
You know, I really saw a need for content that was focused on the local community and that would include current events happening in the village and at the school, a local safety bulletin, you know, the weather forecast as you've seen.
Egemeyer says the live stream, which is called King's Corner after the school's mascot, is a product of elders in the previous generation laying the groundwork for language revitalization in Port Lions and around Kodiak Island. That multi-year-long effort by multiple organizations and individuals has led to Aleutic textbooks, digital audio recordings of native speakers, and language courses for college students or even adults.
If we don't teach our children now, this is how languages die, and it's unfortunately not uncommon.
Alaska Native languages in general are at risk of being lost or going extinct, as elders who speak the language are passing on. For Koniag or Kodiak Aleutic, which is the dialect mainly spoken in the Kodiak archipelago, less than 20 fluent first language speakers are still alive today. Egemeyer says the class will go through the rest of this semester, and he hopes to continue it this summer and next school year, too.
We say in Aleutic, Tunk Chukum Gin Chali, I will see you again.
Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Havi.
The U.S. Postal Service is hosting a first day of issue ceremony for its Forever Stamps, celebrating powwows. Four stamps showcase paintings of Native dancers by Cochiti Pueblo artist Mateo Romero, featuring women's traditional dance, crow hop dance, men's hoop dance, and women's fancy shawl dance. The ceremony will be held at the Gathering of Nations powwow in April in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kowanek Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members serve to alleviate poverty while earning money for college and gaining professional skills. Rewarding service opportunities can be found at AmeriCorps.gov/VISTA.
Support by Sanofsky Chambers Law, championing tribal sovereignty and Native American rights since 1976, from opioids litigation to treaty rights to tribal self-governance, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska. Sanofsky Chambers Law.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Like if you have a spouse and you have a disagreement, you don't divorce, you work it out based on your mutual commitment and mutual benefit.
The State House overwhelmingly passes a resolution recognizing Alaska's close ties with Canada. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, March 24th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, school districts grapple with funding in limbo after the president orders the Department of Education abolished.
This federal funding allows schools to deepen knowledge for their teachers, provide additional experiences that we all value.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If domestic violence has touched your life, know that you are not alone. You have the power to break free and build a future filled with love and respect. There's hope and help waiting for you. For free and confidential support, visit notaloneak.org to speak to someone who's trained to help. Every Alaskan deserves to feel safe. This message sponsored by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
As tensions rise between the U.S. and Canada, the Alaska House of Representatives says it recognizes Canada's right to govern itself and opposes efforts to restrict cross-border trade. The State House passed a resolution today recognizing Alaska's close ties with its eastern neighbor. Every member of the largely Democratic bipartisan majority joined most of the Republican minority to approve the resolution 33-4. House Majority Leader Chuck Kopp, an Anchorage Republican, says lawmakers want President Trump and Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney to find common ground.
To work together amicably to resolve the tariff situation in a way that shows the respect for territorial and sovereignty of both nations, and in a way that recognizes how urgent we need this relationship.
Trump has directly threatened Canada's sovereignty. He has called for its annexation by economic force and addressed its prime minister as governor. Trump has also imposed, paused, delayed, and promised to expand tariffs on Canada and Mexico, among other countries. Concerns over a trade war between the two allies and beyond have spurred fears of an economic slowdown in the U.S. and around the world. Closer to home, leaders in British Columbia have threatened tolls on Alaska-bound trucks. The dispute has led residents and officials in border towns like Haines and Skagway to urge their leaders to cooperate with one another and find a way forward. Anchorage Republican Representative Dan Sattler called Alaska and Canada partner provinces that share a frontier spirit.
No relationship or friendship is perfect, and no relationship is conflict-free. But if there is any stress in that relationship, we work it out. It's like if you have a spouse and you have a disagreement, you don't divorce, you work it out based on your mutual commitment and mutual benefit.
Republican Representatives Jamie Allard of Anchorage, Bill Elam of Soldotna, Mike Prox of North Pole, and Kathy Tilton of Wasilla were the only members to vote against the resolution. They did not provide a reason for their opposition during debate. The resolution now heads for the Senate, which is considering a similar measure. The University of Alaska is rolling back its diversity, equity, and inclusion programs in compliance with recent executive orders signed by President Donald Trump. Administrators say that's to safeguard the flow of federal dollars to UAF research programs. Meanwhile, the federal government has announced investigations into some universities for noncompliance, while others have lost funding altogether. As the Alaska Desk's Shelby Herbert reports, that's left some University of Alaska Fairbanks faculty and students waiting for the other shoe to drop.
A few dozen UAF students, faculty, and their dogs are huddled together in a frozen parking lot on campus. It looks like a tailgate party, until you see the signs in their hands. Many in the crowd are here to protest the University of Alaska Board of Regents' decision last month to scrub all references to DEI off the university's website and other publications.
There are so many people out here dancing and just having fun and holding hope, so it's empowering.
That's Hazel Probst, a senior undergraduate anthropology student at UAF. She says she understands the university system's desire to protect its federal funding, but she wishes administrators hadn't capitulated as quickly as they did.
In order to promote equity, we need to continue to uphold the diversity and equity inclusion rules that the university has had for many years. I think we need to wait, and once we are punished for continuing to uphold our DEI laws, then we can take action in court.
But the University of Alaska system isn't willing to accept that risk. UAF Chancellor Dan White says the university is committed to maintaining an inclusive, non-discriminatory environment. But he affirmed the Board of Regents' decision.
The motion came out and said, we support free speech and we support these longstanding values of academic freedom, and we'll continue to do so. But in our institutional websites, let's take that, those words, DEI, off of our website, and let's think about, now, how do we understand belonging for all students?
Federal dollars make up more than a quarter of UAF's total operating revenue. The biggest portion of that pot of money comes from the National Science Foundation, or NSF, which is bracing for steep cuts in the Trump administration's forthcoming budget. White says that could throw UAF's goal of becoming a top-tier research institution into jeopardy.
National Science Foundation's budget were cut. That would have an impact on us. But, you know, what we can do is focus on things we can control. And what we can control is continuing to recruit students, continuing to seek the funding that's important for research.
Carl Tape is a seismologist researching earthquakes at the university's Geophysical Institute. A lot of his funding comes from federal sources, including NSF and the Department of Defense. None of that funding has been interrupted, and Tape hopes it stays that way. He says he's mostly just trying to keep his head down.
It's really upsetting a lot of people. I can understand that, but, you know, it's like a family. I have students that I'm responsible for, and first and foremost, you know, I have to figure out how to secure funding for them and for myself.
Tape says equity practices are important, but most of his graduate students are federally funded, and any shakeup that could cause the federal government to cut funding would be catastrophic to their future employment and ongoing research. But to professors in other departments, the federal shift away from DEI policies is the bigger catastrophe.
A lot of what DEI does is it sets up opportunities for students to have a way to financially make those opportunities happen.
Sarah McConnell is a professor in UAF's music department. She says she expects many of her students will be negatively impacted by the change.
These kids who have earned the right to go to various institutions, whether it's an assistantship or some great scholarship, is going to go away because they're removing the funding associated with any kind of DEI initiative.
Several other UAF faculty members who declined to be identified over concerns about their employment echoed similar fears for students who have written diversity statements into their applications or have project proposals with DEI elements. Some said they worry about job security, especially those whose positions are attached to one-year federal funding increments. Many don't want to be the proverbial nail that gets hammered, but there are internal debates happening over how and to what degree faculty members should comply with executive orders. Chancellor White says he's received handfuls of letters of concern and that he's trying to offer reassurance to UAF students and employees.
We all have to understand that it's a rapidly changing environment, and the Board of Regents has a responsibility to respond as they understand to help the university move forward.
If there is any consensus at all among faculty, it's that they're doing their very best to look after their students who could be most vulnerable to funding cuts. Reporting in Fairbanks, I'm Shelby Herbert.
A bridge used daily by thousands of drivers between Anchorage and the Mat-Su will close for repairs next month. It's part of a Glen Highway project expected to trigger major traffic slowdowns and delays into the summer. The Mat-Su Sentinel reports the northbound span of the Knick River Bridge between mile 30 and 31 on the Glen Highway will close for at least 30 days. That's while crews resurface the deck and replace joints connecting the bridge to the roadway. Work is expected to start by mid-April. Officials plan to divert all traffic onto the southbound span, where a trio of lanes will be reconfigured twice a day to provide two lanes of travel for the direction with the heaviest traffic. When the northbound work is complete, the southbound side will undergo a similar closure, with all traffic diverted to the newly reopened side. Drivers should expect significant backups and delays, especially during peak commuting hours. About 31,400 vehicles cross the decades-old bridge spans each day, according to state traffic data. Commuters are encouraged to telework or carpool to reduce traffic during the project. Drivers can avoid the construction entirely by driving the Old Glenn Highway through Butte, but state transportation officials do not plan to designate that route as an official detour because it is too far out of the way and not designed to handle high traffic volumes. Construction is not expected to be fully completed until just before the Alaska State Fair in August. The $20 million project will be paid for with federal funds and includes similar work slated for the Peters Creek Bridge next year. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, passengers recall the harrowing experience after a plane's front window broke midair.
Ask them to pray. So during that moment, we had joined hands. We offered a prayer.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Seward Peninsula Subsistence Regional Advisory Council will meet to develop federal wildlife proposals and discuss other subsistence-related issues. The public is invited to participate in the meeting April 1st and 2nd in Nome. More information at doi.gov/subsistence/regions or call 800-478-1456. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
Three people were rescued this morning after their small plane went through the ice near the east side of Tustamina Lake, about 40 miles southeast of Soldotna. According to an online dispatch from Alaska State Troopers, the Alaska Army National Guard rescued an adult pilot and two children from a Piper supercruiser at about 10:30 a.m. The plane was reported missing Sunday night, about 12 hours before it was found. The non-commercial flight originated from the Soldotna Airport. Dale Eicher is a pilot from Sterling who flew above the site and reported the plane's location to troopers. He took an aerial photograph that shows the plane partially submerged under ice near a glacier. He says the plane was spotted about 15 minutes before by a Good Samaritan pilot.
Wasn't expecting to find him, wasn't expecting to find him alive. It's pretty great.
Eicher says he saw the three passengers sitting atop the wings of the plane before rescuers arrived in a helicopter. The survivors were taken to Central Peninsula Hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. The hospital did not disclose the current status of the patients. None of the authorities reached for comment identified the survivors by name. A 16-year-old snow machiner from Soldotna died over the weekend after he was caught in an avalanche in Turnagain Pass. Alaska State Troopers say Tucker Chollin was riding Saturday on the backside of Seattle Ridge when the slope gave way. He was buried under 10 feet of snow for about an hour, according to the Chugach National Forest Avalanche Information Center. Andrew Schauer, the center's lead avalanche specialist, says Chollin was alone at the time of the avalanche.
It was just the one individual that was caught.
Okay.
There are other groups in the area, but no one else on that slope.
Schauer says a weak layer of snow buried last month under additional snowfall has led to heightened concern of avalanches from Girdwood south to Seward. Prior to Saturday's avalanche, the center had warned of four human-triggered avalanches in the Seattle Creek drainage, none of which caught or injured people.
The scary thing right now is that the conditions that led to that avalanche on Saturday still exist, and it's just as likely that someone could trigger a very similar avalanche today or tomorrow or for the next few days and weeks.
Schauer says people should avoid travel on steep slopes as well as flatter terrain beneath them.
This type of avalanche problem has shown that it can be triggered from low angle terrain below steeper slopes. So there's a possibility that you could be traveling in relatively flat terrain and trigger an avalanche above you that comes down and buries you.
Warming temperatures will increase avalanche risk in the area, Schauer says, as will any late season snowstorms. Saturday's slide occurred nearly 20 miles south of an avalanche that caught and killed three heliskiers earlier this month, burying them under 40 to 100 feet of snow. Their bodies have yet to be recovered due to dangerous snow conditions. President Donald Trump signed an executive order Thursday abolishing the U.S. Department of Education. While many key programs remain unchanged, hundreds of millions of federal dollars are at stake in Alaska if the order disrupts funding. KTOO's Jamie Deep has more.
The recent executive order is part of the Trump administration's long-term plan to get rid of the federal department. It currently funds special education and other programs that support rural and high-poverty schools. It also makes sure all students are receiving fair public education. Alaska Department of Education and Early Development Commissioner Dina Bishop attended the executive order signing in Washington, D.C. on Thursday, as first reported by the Anchorage Daily News. The federal department manages millions that fund programs that benefit Alaska's students and schools and monitors the quality of services. Alaska receives the most federal funding per student in the country. Trump says many of the programs and funding will stay in place. But Juneau School Board member Will Muldoon says he's concerned about the lack of guidance on navigating the changes in the short term.
I haven't gotten any kind of roadmap. And I think that's always scary, too, because like education is a big ship. So turning it, changing it, it takes a while.
Special education is largely funded and supported by the federal department. The Juneau School District reports close to 900 students are receiving special education services this school year. Muldoon says he's concerned that changes to the department could make navigating the system for students with disabilities and their families more difficult as well.
People don't go to school and graduate and get a degree to be an advocate for their child. It shouldn't be a job.
The department does more than fund special education. The federal agency also helps fund schools with high numbers of students whose families are experiencing poverty, called Title I schools. There are five of those schools in Juneau. Amanda Duvall is the federal programs coordinator for the district. She says every Title I school in the district used the federal funds to hire another teacher this year.
That is always up for discussion every year, but the reality is most of them find that additional teacher at these high class sizes is helpful.
She says these federal funds stack on top of what goes toward general funds for the district, which mainly come from the state and local level. Duvall says insufficient state funding makes federal support critical.
We are heavily grant dependent and grateful for all of our various partners in the community. And this federal funding allows schools to deepen knowledge for their teachers, to have cohesive opportunities for their students, provide additional experiences that we all value.
The Department of Education also manages nearly $46 million in financial aid for University of Alaska students. University of Alaska President Pat Pitney said in a message sent to the entire university system Thursday that there are no immediate changes for students. More than half of the students at the University of Alaska Southeast receive financial aid. UAS Chancellor Aparna Palmer says administrators are monitoring any changes, but she encourages students to continue applying for federal aid.
As far as I can tell, in the short term, we don't expect to have any large impacts to our operations or to our ability to offer students federal financial aid or their Pell Grants.
Despite the executive order, only Congress can abolish the Department of Education. Whether lawmakers decide to follow the president's lead remains to be seen. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jamie Deep.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, marking 47 years of commitment to operating the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com. Did you know 100 years ago, the chances of a baby dying in Alaska before their first birthday was almost 10%? Because of advances in public health like sanitation, access to clean water, vaccines for children, and access to healthcare in rural communities, the chances of dying are now less than 1%. To learn more about what the Alaska Department of Health is doing to improve Alaskans' health for the next 100 years, visit health.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
A draft of the 20-year plan for Alaska's state ferry system is open for public comment. Officials with the Alaska Department of Transportation are asking residents to weigh in on the plan that will guide the Alaska Marine Highway System through the year 2045. The long-range plan seeks to increase service to over 30 ports. In recent years, port calls have decreased and coastal communities have repeatedly voiced their concerns. In an online public meeting Wednesday, AMHS Director Craig Tornga said they're planning for more reliable service, not increasing it much, but bringing it back to pre-pandemic levels.
we're really looking at trying to increase the port calls at our current communities and to make sure that we have some reliable service on a regular basis that can be planned. And then keeping it as efficient as we can from a cost perspective for the state so it can be maintainable going forward.
The state plans to build new hybrid ferries to replace the aging fleet, hire more workers to run them, and improve infrastructure at the ports. All of that, plus regular maintenance, will cost about $3 billion. The plan to pay for it includes a combination of state and federal money along with increasing profits from ridership. In creating the plan, the state hired engineering and research groups to crunch data and gather information from dozens of coastal communities. Economist Katie Berry says the ferry plan anticipates the state to appropriate roughly $120 million a year in operating costs. The 20-year plan also calculates that federal funding remains intact.
The expectation is that the federal funding sources that have predated the Federal Infrastructure Act will be stable over this time period.
The infrastructure law brought in about $700 million in federal funds to the ferry system in the last 3 years. Meanwhile, Governor Mike Dunleavy has vetoed millions in state ferry funding that the legislature approved. Efforts for a long-range plan began in 2022 after the legislature created the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board to help guide the state's DOT. The 9-member board is made up of state workers and coastal residents with ferry knowledge. The public comment period on the long-range plan ends March 30th. You can comment online at the state's DOT website. The operations board will consider the plan in April before it heads to the legislature. According to state law, the plan will be updated every 5 years. A plane traveling from Scammon Bay to Anchorage made an emergency landing in the village of Sleetmute earlier this month after a front window ruptured shortly after takeoff. The Trig Air commuter plane was carrying 9 passengers, none of whom sustained serious injuries. But as KYUK's Samantha Watson reports, the event left passengers feeling shaken and frustrated.
Darlene Ulak was traveling to Anchorage with her husband, grandson, and 2 other extended family members. Partway through the flight, she heard a loud pop.
I ran to my husband, who was seated across from me. I asked him, what was that? Was that the ice? Shortly after I asked the question, big gush of cold wind came to me. I quickly put my hat on, my scarf, my mittens, my hood.
The driver's side of the windshield appeared to have broken away, leaving an open hole in the front of the plane. Clint Johnson, the chief of the Alaska Regional Office of the National Transportation Safety Board, says that the incident started out with a crack in the Pilatus PC-12's windshield. He says that as of March 20th, the agency's understanding is that after the plane began its emergency descent, most of the right side of the windshield broke away. Johnson says the NTSB is investigating the incident. Reached March 20th, a representative for Trig Air said in an email that the airline is cooperating with authorities in the ongoing investigation and did not provide additional details. Ulak commends the pilot, who she says seemed calm after the window blew out, and turned the plane to descend towards the airport in the upper Kuskokwim village of Sleetmute. It's not clear why the plane landed in Sleetmute or if the pilot considered making an emergency landing in other villages. Ulak's niece, Rodrika Sundown, was also on the plane with her 2-year-old son.
I know I shouldn't have, but I had grabbed my son out of his seat, put him in my coat, and buckled us both. I didn't want him to get too cold because that wind was chilling.
After the initial shock and immediate task of bundling for warmth, the passengers braced themselves for the unknown.
During that moment, the lady behind me, she tapped me. We should all pray. Ask them to pray. So during that moment, we had joined hands. We all said a prayer.
After what Sundown guesses was around 30 frigid minutes, filled with intense turbulence close to landing, the plane landed in Sleetmute Airport. in Sleep Mute, Ulak says they were greeted by a caretaker of the local Hills Lodge who offered them tea and coffee. Ulak says she couldn't have met them with more kindness. All 9 passengers opted to stay overnight at Hills Lodge. Ulak says the group was in too much shock to immediately board another plane. That night, they all sat together at the lodge's dining table to eat a meal the caretaker provided. Afterwards, they gathered around the TV to watch a local March Madness basketball game. The next morning, a plane from a different airline arrived to take them to Anchorage. Once arriving, Ulak says they were greeted by a representative from Trig Air who gave them pastries and listened to their accounts of the incident. But after that, Ulak says the airline had not been in contact with them until 13 days later. Her family says there's still no word about compensation or liability. Ulak says although no one sustained significant injuries, the event has been mentally and emotionally taxing.
It's still lingering, those feelings, the noise, the sounds. And even see pictures or even to talk about it is makes me shake. And even through the night when I wake up in the middle of the night, I get scared.
As of March 21st, there's not a timeline for when the incident investigation may wrap up. In Bethel, I'm Samantha Watson.
People living in the northern part of the state will have a chance to watch rockets soar through aurora-lit night skies for the next couple weeks. It's all part of a NASA experiment called AWESOME, which seeks to observe how auroras affect Earth's upper atmosphere. Starting tonight, the research rockets will launch intermittently from ground stations all over the interior, from Eagle in the east to Utqiagvik in the north, and all the way down to the Poker Flat Research Range just about 35 miles from Fairbanks. Scientists hope the study might also improve space weather forecasts. The idea is to measure the timing and strength of the energy waves thrown around by this spring's strong aurora. Don Hampton is a scientist at the University of Alaska Fairbanks and a partner on the AWESOME project. He says the way the aurora interacts with the atmosphere kind of works like dropping a pebble into a lake.
And when you do that, the atmosphere actually heats up and you get like the ripples that come out from a pebble you drop in the lake. And the same thing happens with the atmosphere up there. And you will see these what are called atmospheric gravity waves come out from sources like that. So the idea is to look for that.
Hampton says spectators are in for a pretty spectacular light show, with the rockets emitting a glowing, multicolored vapor trail for more than 10 minutes at a time. And that's not even including the aurora. He says it's no coincidence that the experiment is taking place right now.
The good news is we're at what's called a solar max, so we get a lot of aurora. Typically this time of the year, there's a little bit more chance of seeing active aurora. That has to do with sort of the orientation of the Earth's magnetic field at the time.
Depending on weather conditions, the rockets will blast off in the window of time from 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. The last possible launch will be on the night of April 6th. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Eric Stone and Jamie Deep in Juneau, Shelby Herbert in Fairbanks, Hunter Morrison in Kenai, Angela Denning in Petersburg, and Samantha Watson in Bethel. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky's our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Ready or not, University of Alaska Giving Day is here. Visit givingday.alaska.edu to support UAF, UAA, and UAS students and programs. Double or triple your gift, win exciting prizes, and make a difference through 1 p.m. on March 27th. More at givingday.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Foundation.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.
I know you think that I shouldn't still love you all time.
I'd still have felt it. Where's the sense in that? I promise I'm not trying to make your life harder or return to where we were. But I will go down with this ship, and I won't put my hands up and surrender. There will be no white flag above my door. I'm in love and always will be. I know I left too much mess and destruction to come back again. I cause nothing but trouble. I understand if you can't talk to me again. And if you live by the rules of it's over, then I'm sure that that makes sense. And I will go down with this ship. I'm in love and always will be.
Love like this before. by one from the sky. I know Mars could not be too far behind. Cause baby, this kind of beauty, it's got no reason to ever be shy. Cause honey, this kind of beauty, the kind that comes from inside.
Could you be?
Could you be
the most beautiful girl in the world?
So beautiful, beautiful.
It's plain to see.
Plain to see.
You're the reason that God made a girl.
Stop!
KSDP,